In a moment, I will introduce our guest speaker for the Augsburger Lecture Series, but I'd like to give just a bit of background, first of all, and to recognize Dr. Myron and Esther Augsburger. Yes, please, stand. Stand, please. Thank you. The older I get, the more I am painfully aware that students don't always know the history of EMU and the people who provided leadership here over many years. And you need to know some of this history, and particularly because it connects with this lectureship series. Dr. Augsburger was president of Eastern Mennonite College and Seminary in those days from 1965 to 1980. Now, the most amazing part of that story, among many, many amazing parts of the story, was that he was only 35 years old when he began as president. And I had the rude awakening of arriving here 10 years ago and realizing that I was already older than he was after he had served for 15 years. So that tells you how young he was. He was a widely respected leader in the Mennonite Church and well known as an evangelist. He had done his doctorate at Union Theological in Richmond, Virginia. And during his years as president here, he carried on preaching missions in evangelism around the U.S. and Canada and around the world. I happen to know a lot about the U.S. and Canadian piece of that because for 6 years I did the advance work in advance of those preaching missions, and then on numbers of those occasions was with them during those eight-day-long events that were ecumenical with wide-ranging churches who sponsored those events in many communities across the U.S. and Canada. So someday I will be given the privilege of telling lots of stories about those events. But after that experience and during those years, I gained a great deal of respect for persons like Myron who could share the essence of the gospel with a wide-ranging group of persons, some from non-church backgrounds, others from deeply committed faith perspectives, but wide-ranging in terms of the ecumenical spectrum. That background is important for you to know because he was president here and Esther is an artist, and together they have continued to share the gospel around the world in a variety of settings. They then established this endowment, which provides for the Augsburger Lecture Series each year. That's the background for us gathering yesterday in the seminary chapel, last evening, and again today. So, please join me in thanking Myron and Esther for this contribution. Dr. Dana Robert is our guest for this lecture series this year. She is the Truman Collins Professor of World Christianity and History of Mission and the Director of the Center for Global Christianity and Mission at Boston University. She describes the significance of the Center for Global Christianity and Mission in this way. Christianity is now a worldwide faith with believers evenly distributed across the continents. The Center for Global Christianity and Mission is committed to supporting and understanding the global Christian community through critical reflection, faithful witness, and thoughtful engagement with multiple cultures. She is a lecturer who is widely published as an author of many articles and books on the theme of mission. Her most recent books are Christian Mission, How Christianity Became a World Religion, and Converting Colonialism, Visions and Realities in Mission History, 1706 to 1914. Her research interests span the fields of mission history, the history of world Christianity, and mission theology. She's directed over 60 doctoral students at Boston University in their dissertation work, and her former students hold teaching and ministry positions around the world. Dr. Robert received her bachelor's degree from Louisiana State University and her PhD from Yale University. And as we've learned since she's here, she is married to a person from Zimbabwe. And I've been told by faculty members here and administrators that they have read both your work and his, and we're happy to find out that you actually know each other. because these are two scholars who have published, and people didn't necessarily know that you were married, and so they were happy to hear that newfound understanding of a relationship with people that they have respected. Welcome, Dr. Robert, for this lecture.
It's a great honor for me to have been invited to deliver the Augsburger Lectures, and especially to have the Augsburgers present. So thank you for inviting me. I've had a wonderful time seeing your beautiful campus and meeting people here. For this lecture series, I selected a basic theme that remains important for mission, past, present, and future. This is the issue of friendship. More than ever before, young people want to enter into relationships with others unlike themselves. And more than ever before, cross-cultural friendship seems possible. Governments issue over 1 billion travel visas every year. Ease of travel and instant communication means that today people of all ages go on mission trips. Mission agencies and churches increasingly define their purpose as making friends with the poor, or with sex trafficked women, or with Muslims, or with marginalized groups. The millennial generation, which is you folks sitting here, feels interconnected with people all over the world. And you can tweet out what you feel like during this very service. Colleges and universities develop their own outreach programs, partly designed to help students make friends with people unlike themselves. And as I learned last night from President Swartz and Druber, Eastern Mennonite University is sending something like 60% of the student body for semester-long immersions abroad. So this school is one that's charted a pathway for international relationships. Thus, in the 21st century, we see that friendship has moved from a local practice to kind of a global consciousness. Friendship is possible everywhere. Well, that means there's a real danger that it's nowhere. So in the few minutes that I have with you this morning, I want you to reflect with me on the nature of friendship as a biblical missional practice. How do friendship and mission actually relate to each other? When you engage in your semester abroad or your summer term abroad, especially if you go to people from another culture or in another part of the world, when you relate to people unlike yourself, what do you think of when you think of friendship? Now, last night I talked a bit about friendship in relation to mission history. And for this lecture series, I've done a lot of just reflecting on the book of John. So if for this talk, I want to reflect on several aspects about Jesus and friendship in the book of John, and make brief references to insights they led me in relevant to mission today. First, let's look at Jesus and friendship. The book of John tells us that Jesus connected his calling to human friendship. And first is to state the obvious but often neglected fact. Jesus had friends. Willard Swartley notes that the books of John and John 1 through 3 contain over 10% of the usages of words for love in the entire Bible. Thus, the book of John is uniquely the relational gospel, the gospel of love. Jesus had deep friendships, and if you just go and read through the gospel of John and think about this, you see him connecting with people in every chapter, just about. He changed the lives of his friends, and they changed him. Former missionary Stan Skreslet has written a marvelous book on images of mission in the New Testament, and he notes that John is unique in showing how people came to follow Jesus through friendship with other followers. Said Stan Skreslet, many of Jesus' followers are introduced to him by others. And he says, sharing Christ with friends is what happens when followers of Jesus open up to loved ones or others with whom they are already in relationship and share their experience of faith on personal terms. So in the book of John, we see Jesus' own belief in the kingdom of God is spread through his relationships. And thus we see the bridging function of friendship. But what does that look like? Was this a strategy to meet people? Is it some kind of technique? Absolutely not. Jesus approached others in love and humility. It was a natural, organic way of being. In knowing Jesus, people saw God. As Christians, we pursue mission in the way of Jesus Christ. Andrew Kirk writes, following in the way of Christ is the test of missionary faithfulness. So if we try to be in mission without looking to the example of Jesus himself, we've made some pretty big mistakes. We're going to make mistakes anyway, but we make even more if we don't turn to the example of Jesus for our model. So what can we learn today about mission? Well, let's look at three specific incidents in the book of John. And of course, it's hard to pick just three. There's so many. It's such a relational gospel. The first one is one that I mentioned last night, but I want to develop in a different way. And this is the question, what are you looking for and where are you staying? This is from John chapter 1, verses 35 through 39. And this is the story of Jesus calling the disciples, the first disciples. Jesus said, quote, when Jesus turned and saw them following, he said to them, what are you looking for? They said to him, Rabbi, which translated means teacher. Where are you staying? He said to them, come and see. They came and saw where he was staying, and they remained with him that day. Now, when you think about your cross-cultural experience that you're doing here at EMU or elsewhere, you think about going, right? You think you're being sent somewhere. Part of the eternal attraction of mission is this power of movement, of going into the world to serve God. The book of Matthew stresses discipleship and obedience. For example, in what we call the Great Commission, go therefore and make disciples of all nations. Now, this is a pretty powerful idea. God might send me somewhere different or interesting. And in 2013, this idea of going into the world fits very conveniently into the process of building a resume that shows I have some global experience. But look what happened when these two disciples met Jesus. The first thing they did was to stay put. They spent time with Jesus. They located themselves in a deep spiritual relationship. So Jesus' calling of the disciples reminds us that the call to mission is not a call to mindless travel for the purpose of self-improvement. The first concern of the disciples was to remain where Jesus was and to stay in relationship with him. Their first task in the missional calling was to get to know the Lord. to build loyalty with each other. This patience, the patience of remaining, is an important lesson for mission, especially today in our globalized world where movement is seen as normal. The culture tells us it is good to be running to and fro. Our Western culture also tells us friendship is easy, a casual relationship we can pursue in passing as quickly as a text message. But Jesus' first questions to the disciples was, "What are you looking for?" And the answer was to find out where Jesus is staying and to remain with him. Friendship requires commitment. Friendship in cross-cultural mission requires that we commit ourselves both to Jesus Christ and to others unlike ourselves in concrete, specific, and long-term relationships. The great Peruvian mission leader Samuel Escobar has complained that instead of doing the hard work of interacting with local communities, sometimes young mission travelers retreat to their homes in the evenings and email their friends back in the U.S. It is easier to text the people we already know back home than to take the risk of immersing ourselves among unfamiliar strangers. We North Americans, U.S. Americans, we think of ourselves as friendly people. We are friendly. And we want that friendship on our own cultural terms, namely that of familiarity with few obligations. So the first question Jesus asked the disciples is, "What are you looking for?" And our answer is to commit ourselves to being fully present, remaining with Jesus and the people he asks us to serve. The lesson of remaining, of commitment, of committing ourselves to a particular group of people for the long haul, is in fact changing mission practice among young people in American cities, for example. And I'm sure you've all read things by a group called the New Monastics, just to give one example. Groups of young people who settle into the inner cities of Nashville and Atlanta and Washington, D.C., and commit themselves to stay grounded in relationships with the people they meet. Father Anthony Gittens is another example. He's a great mission anthropologist. He has spent 30 years working with homeless women in Chicago. That's his location. Even though he travels everywhere and he gives lectures and he teaches about cross-cultural anthropology, mission anthropology, he stays grounded. He remains with homeless women in Chicago. Chris Hertz, founder of the mission Word Made Flesh, has learned over decades of international work that maintaining consistent relationships with people who expect to be neglected and forgotten is the essence of mission that makes a difference in people's lives. The biblical mission of remaining asks with Jesus and the disciples, "What are you looking for? Where are you staying?" A second incident in the book of John I want to look at is, "Give me a drink." Among Jesus' many encounters with people in the book of John, one of the most important is his conversation with the Samaritan woman in chapter 4. Being from the northern province of Galilee, Jesus had to pass through Samaria to go home. He sat down by the well in Sychar. When a Samaritan woman approached, Jesus asked her for a drink. Now, in that simple request, he crossed the boundaries of gender, ethnicity, and religion. And the woman's reaction was to say, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask a drink of me, a woman of Samaria?" Now, what is immediately noticeable about this passage is that Jesus sits down in her town and asks her for help. He enters into a relationship of mutual exchange by assuming that she has something to offer him. Often in mission practice today, we focus on what stuff we can take to help others. We take a well-equipped mission team to staff a clinic or build a church or run a vacation Bible school. This surprising encounter with the Samaritan woman was not that of a well-equipped squad of disciples descending on a needy Samaritan village. Here was Jesus himself in a missional situation, and the first thing he does is ask the local woman for help. His request for water, the very stuff of survival, opened the door to a mutual exchange between people who are not usually seen as equals. Jesus' request for water became the opening for him to enter her reality, and it led to that deeper exchange about living water. Now, obviously, we are not Jesus the Messiah, but Jesus' request for a drink demonstrated the foundation of friendship, which is mutuality. Now, as someone who goes regularly to Zimbabwe, I find it hard to accept things from poor people. They give me stuff. They want to help me. And my inclination is to say, no, no, you're poor. Let me help you. I don't really want to take what you have because then you do without. But who am I to make the decision they cannot afford to give me a gift? The blessing of giving requires that we receive. My pastor tells the story of when he was a boy in rural Kentucky. His father was a minister, and every week people in the church hosted them for a meal. One very poor family lived on a small farm and grew their own vegetables and had no money, but they wanted to take their turn inviting the pastor's family over for dinner. So the minister's family drove to the hollow where the poor folks lived. They sat down for a meal of vegetables. Then the poor family proudly brought out a can of Spam, which had been carefully sliced and fried. Because the family could only afford one can, and I don't know if you've ever had Spam, but it's pretty awful, the pastor and his family had to eat the Spam while the poor family watched. Needless to say, the visitors didn't want to eat the Spam, especially with the poor people watching them, but to have refused their hospitality would have been to refuse their friendship. So the story of the Samaritan woman, one of the most profound examples of the spread of the gospel in the New Testament, begins with Jesus asking her for help. And the unexpected result is that she goes out and shares what she learned from him with others. The final question, and I'm going to speed this up because I see I'm running out of time. The final question that I wanted to bring up is that of, where have you laid him? Where have you laid him? The deepest individual friendship that is explored in the book of John is that of Jesus with Lazarus and his sisters, Mary and Martha. We read in chapter 11 that Lazarus got sick and died. And I know you know the text. Jesus goes there, and Lazarus has been dead already for 4 days. And what happens? Jesus cries. That's the first thing he does. Before he resurrects Lazarus, he cries. And people say, look how he loved them. Jesus did not use his divinity to avoid the pain of life. He was not above the fray of human suffering. When Jesus asked, where have you laid him? He entered into the depths of what it means to be fully human. And so my third example here is to say that to truly relate to others, to be their friend, requires entering their reality, asking, where have you laid him? Where are you suffering? And crying, I am suffering with you. In January of 2010, a powerful earthquake hit Haiti and killed over 300,000 people and left 1 million people homeless. Now, I'm a United Methodist, and we lost a lot of missionaries there. A lot in the sense of the head of the United Methodist Committee on Relief died. The head of the United Methodist Volunteers in Mission died. And the head of the United Methodist Missionary Association was trapped for 3 days with these others under the Hotel Montana. When he came out and was rescued by French rescuers, it was like a Lazarus resurrection. And I asked him later, Jim Gully, I said, Jim, how did being buried in a hole for 3 days change your life? He said, it didn't. He said, when I decided to be a missionary, when God called me to cross cultures to be with other people, I knew I could die doing it. I knew I would enter into their suffering. So sure, I'm grateful to be alive, and I wondered if God's fate will for me was to die in a hole in the ground, and I'm glad it wasn't. But I gave my life away already when I entered into a call to mission. Where have you laid him? In asking this question, Jesus showed his solidarity with ordinary humanity. John writes that after Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead, many people believed he was the Messiah. Maybe they believed because they saw him suffering with the people. So let me conclude. Today in mission, cross-cultural friendship is important. And I want to leave you with these three questions to inform your cross-cultural practice. What are you looking for and where are you staying? Second, remember, give me a drink. And third, where have you laid him? The personal encounters between Jesus and his friends show us that mission is more than traveling to see new places. It is more than short-term projects to help the poor. Mission in the way of Jesus is a matter of incarnational practice, of solidarity with and love for others. Friendship reminds us that being in mission means being fully human in the way of Jesus.